This is VOA News by remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Royal Canadian Mounted Police Constable Heidi Stevenson was among the at least 16 people killed by gunmen on Sunday during a 12-hour rampage in Nova Scotia and what was the country's worst modern-era mass shooting. Stevenson was a 23-year veteran of the force with two children. RCMP said the gunman, 51-year-old Gabriel Wortman, at one point masqueraded as a policeman, appearing at one stage to have been wearing part of a police uniform. He had also painstakingly disguised his car to look like a police cruiser. Wortman shot people in several locations in Nova Scotia. RCMP Commissioner Brenda Lucky told the Canadian Broadcasting Corps that the police knew of at least 16 victims besides the shooter. She added that there was no indication at this time that the killings were terrorism-related. Police said there was no apparent link between Wortman and at least some of the victims. They said they had no idea what his motive might have been. Police discovered the killings late Saturday after multiple reports of shots at a house in a small coastal town about 130 kilometers north of the provincial capital of Halifax. Globally, there are 165,000 COVID-19-related deaths with 2.4 million confirmed cases. In the United States, more than 40,000 people have died with 764,000 confirmed cases. Over 2,000 people rallied at the Washington State Capitol Sunday to protest Democratic Governor Jay Inslee's stay-at-home order to limit the spread of the coronavirus, defying a ban on gatherings of 50 people or more. Despite pleas from rally organizers to wear face coverings or masks, many did not. U.S. President Donald Trump on Friday tweeted implying support for similar protests in Michigan, Minnesota, and Virginia to liberate them from social distancing rules. This is VOA News. North Korean state news agency KCNA Sunday denied a letter was sent to U.S. President Donald Trump. The denial comes after Mr. Trump told reporters that he recently received a nice note from North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. The president had said on Saturday in Washington, "We're doing just fine with North Korea." Speaking of a U.S. media report, KCNA said in a statement that he could have referred to the personal letters that had been exchanged in the past, but we are not sure. But there was no letter addressed recently to the U.S. president by our supreme leadership. Thousands of Los Angeles city workers must take 26 furlough days. It's the equivalent of a 10% pay cut over the course of the next fiscal year as the nation's second largest city deals with the economic fallout from COVID-19 crises. Mayor Eric Garcetti made the announcement Sunday in his emotional State of the City address as he warned of an economic blow far worse than the 2008 recession when city leaders laid off hundreds of workers and eliminated thousands of jobs. Several severe storms raked a wide swath of the deep south of the United States during the nighttime hours, and forecasters are warning of the possibility of tornadoes just a week after a deadly twister outbreak in the region. The National Weather Service said Sunday that parts of several states are under a flash flood warning because of heavy rains and thunderstorms. The agency says tornadoes are a possible threat for parts of Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and South Carolina. The storm threat comes a week after Easter storms pounded the deep south, killing dozens of people. Japan's exports sank 11.7% in March as the coronavirus pandemic slammed auto shipments to the U.S. The finance ministry said Monday that exports to the U.S. fell 16.5% in March from a year earlier. And that while those to China declined 8.7%, trade has slowed recently due to travel restrictions and shutdowns aimed at curbing the outbreak of the coronavirus. The outlook is grim, with the International Monetary Fund forecasting the world economy is heading into its worst slowdown since the 1930s Great Depression. Thailand is seeing a record number of baby leatherback sea turtles hatching, as populous tourist beaches in the country's south were undisturbed amidst the outbreak of the new coronavirus. The director of the Phuket Marine Biological Center told Reuters that since November, they've found 11 nests. It's the highest number in 20 years. The leatherback turtle lays its eggs in dark areas without movement, which were rare when tourists enjoyed the beaches. People also take the eggs for consumption. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. With more than 1,000 coronavirus cases in Cameroon, there are fears the situation could get out of control.
The resumption of classes on the indicative date of 1st June. It is understood that this measure is subject to change depending on the evolution of the pandemic.
Lesotho's besieged Prime Minister calls back troops deployed last Friday. The search continues today in Kenya's Rift Valley following Saturday's landslide. Scores of civilians have been killed, wounded, and abducted in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. And the people of Mali voted yesterday, Sunday, in the second round of their parliamentary elections.
Many people did not show to the booth to vote due to this pandemic, even though the government of Mali, through the president himself, has announced some sanitary measures to help stop the spread of the pandemic.
Yes, Make is a first-round candidate, and Liberian media institutions make yet another appeal to their government to pay its advertising debt. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. More than 1,000 coronavirus cases have been confirmed in conflict-prone Cameroon, provoking fears that the situation could get out of hand if the virus spreads to refugee camps and areas where internally displaced persons from the country's separatist crisis and Boko Haram terrorists reside. As Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé, rights groups are asking for humanitarian assistance.
Cameroon's Prime Minister Joseph John Guti, in a declaration broadcast on all local radio and TV stations, said schools that were closed last March 17 will remain closed for at least the next 45 days since COVID-19 cases have increased from barely 100 in March to over 1,000 on April 18.
The resumption of classes on the indicative date of 1st June. It is understood that this measure is subject to change depending on the evolution of the pandemic.
Ngute called on Cameroonians to remain indoors, practice hygiene methods, and wear masks if they must go out. He said COVID-19 has killed 23 Cameroonians and 180 have recovered, while more than 800 are still being treated in already overcrowded health facilities. Cameroon civil society group leader Edwin Faure says the country may not be financially and materially able to handle its increasing COVID-19 cases because it also has to tackle Boko Haram terrorism on its northern border with Nigeria, separatist conflicts in the English-speaking regions, and the spillover of the carnage in neighboring CAR.
There are alarming numbers of refugees coming in from the Central African Republic and from the Federal Republic of Nigeria. Just imagine that the COVID-19 enters into these refugees' camps and find Cameroon in a very delicate situation.
In a report published on April 17, the International Rescue Committee describes Cameroon as one of the world's most forgotten crises, facing three distinct emergencies, from armed violence in the northwest and southwest to an influx of refugees from Nigeria and Central African Republic. The IRC says with almost 4 million people in need of humanitarian aid and the highest COVID-19 case load across the Sahel and East Africa, the pandemic poses increased danger to people already suffering terrible violence. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
An official of Lesotho's government says troops that were deployed on Saturday by besieged Prime Minister Thomas Thabane were withdrawn on Sunday. The Prime Minister said he deployed the troops to restore order in Lesotho. Mr. Thabane is under pressure from elements within his ruling All Basotho Convention Party for him to step down. for his alleged role in the murder of his estranged wife in 2017. On Friday, April 18, Lesotho's Constitutional Court overturned a decision by the Prime Minister to suspend Parliament. Lesotho has yet to record a single case of the coronavirus, but the Prime Minister said on Saturday that part of the reasons for deploying the troops was to enforce a 24-hour coronavirus lockdown. Minister of Education Francis Shuaile says the troops were pulled back because the situation in the country is calm.
Yesterday morning, the Right Honourable the Prime Minister announced that as far as he could say or tell, he was aware that there were some elements which seemed to be out to disturb the peace in the country. And it was his responsibility to restore and maintain order. So he was deploying the troops, which is what happened yesterday. But as of now, the troops are no longer in those areas where they were yesterday. But I cannot tell as to where they are situated now.
What is the situation with the coronavirus in Lesotho?
Although we have not had any case yet in Lesotho, we have taken proactive measures. Like we are now in a lockout stage, which ends on Tuesday. So latest on Tuesday or before that, we will hear another announcement from the Prime Minister as to how we should move forward if the pandemic remains a threat. So we are waiting. Maybe latest Tuesday, we will get the announcement.
Besides the coronavirus situation in Lesotho, the Prime Minister, Mr. Thabane, has had some political problems. Where are we now in terms of any negotiation how to resolve the political crisis?
Yes, there's actually a split in the Right Honourable the Prime Minister's party. There are those who are saying what you are saying, but there are also those who are against that. But what I cannot say, because I don't have the facts, is how many of them are saying this and how many are saying that.
Francis Shuaile is the Minister of Education of Lesotho. He was speaking with us from the capital, Maseru. The people of Mali voted yesterday, Sunday, in the second round of their parliamentary elections. The first round took place March 29th. The first and second round voting took place in spite of the coronavirus pandemic. Yet Samake ran in the first round to represent Mali's largest electoral district of Kati and lost. He says turnout was low on Sunday, despite the government putting in place measures to protect the voters.
The second round of the elections went well in general, and we have not observed any major incident that could tarnish the credibility of the elections. The procedure I'm talking about, the political aspect is other thing, but there were not a whole lot of influx of people to the voting booths, but the elections were held peacefully.
These elections took place amid the coronavirus pandemic. Did the voters practice any COVID-19 preventive measures during voting?
It should be noted that as of today, Mali has recorded 216 cases of coronavirus. Of course, the affluence to the voting booth were affected by the coronavirus pandemic. Many people did not show to the booth to vote today due to this pandemic. Even though the government of Mali, through the president himself, has announced some sanitary measures to help stop the spread of the pandemic due to elections. Every voting booth is said to be provided with hand washing kits and hand sanitizers and even the mask for voters and also the electoral agents to wear.
Mali has also been plagued by violence perpetrated by jihadists. What do you think will be the first job of the new parliament?
Yes, Mali has been plagued with a cycle of violence due to jihadists, terrorists in the country. And we hope that the new parliament will help bring the government and the people of Mali together for a leadership based on service and a leadership also that is active in fighting against ill governance and corruption, which has led this country to vulnerability.
Yessa Market was a first-round parliamentary candidate in Mali's largest electoral district of Kati. He was speaking with us from the capital, Bamako. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 20th. The UN Human Rights Office says scores of civilians have been killed, wounded, and abducted in worsening inter-ethnic violence between Hema and Lendu in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo's Ituri province. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
More than 150 people have been killed in Jugu and Mahagi territories in Ituri province since early March, raising the number of civilian deaths this year to more than 200. In addition, the UN Human Rights Office reports scores of other civilians have been wounded and abducted in this inter-ethnic conflict. The agency says attacks by Kodeko fighters, a militia tied to the Lendu ethnic group, have escalated against the Hema people after their commander was killed on March 25th by the DRC military. UN Human Rights spokesman Rupert Colville says 23 civilians were killed in the latest attack last week in the village of Koli.
The brutality of the attacks, with perpetrators using machetes to kill women and children, raping, looting property, destroying houses, killing livestock, suggests the aim is to inflict lasting trauma on the affected populations, forcing them to flee, and so gain control over the territory, which is rich in natural resources.
The Lendu, who are mainly farmers, and Hema, a herding and trading people, have been fighting sporadically for decades over valuable resources in their gold mining and oil-rich province. Tens of thousands of people have been killed and hundreds of thousands displaced. After a decade-long lull, fighting between the two groups reemerged in late 2017. A UN report published January found that widespread systematic attacks by the Lendu against the Hema civilian population may constitute crimes against humanity. Colville says the current leaders of the Lendu community have largely distanced themselves from the attackers, and he notes the Hema and other ethnic groups in the area generally have shown restraint.
But we are worried that if the attacks continue without decisive response from the security forces to defend the civilian population, those communities may form self-defense militias, and that would increase the likelihood of a descent into sort of all out into communal violence, which would be absolutely catastrophic.
The UN Human Rights Office is calling on the authorities to strengthen the presence of security forces in the region. It is urging officials to thoroughly investigate alleged abuses and human rights violations and to hold the perpetrators to account. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Four people have died, 13 rescued, including police officers, and thousands more are displaced following a landslide in Kenya's Elgeyo, Marakwet, and West Pokot counties in the Rift Valley following a heavy downpour on Saturday. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the government has not been able to trace those missing 2 days after the tragedy.
The Kenya Meteorological Department had issued a warning on Thursday last week that there would be a heavy rainfall that may result in flooding and landslides, an alert the government ignored. Over the weekend, the counties of Elgeyo Marakwet and West Pokot suffered the blow. Rift Valley Regional Coordinator George Natembeya said that more than 3,000 displaced persons from the affected areas shall be given temporary shelter since the whole village was swept away.
I want to confirm that we lost four people, one person from West Pokot and three people from Elgeyo Marakwet. The entire Chesogon police post that had nine officers was swept away. We have been able to account for eight officers so far. One is missing. You know that the water just came abruptly. It rained in a different place and caused mayhem in another place. The entire Chesogon town was swept away.
The weatherman said areas likely to be hit hard are the Rift Valley region, coastal areas, central Kenya, Nairobi, eastern, western, and some parts of northeastern. Residents living in hill areas have been advised to stay vigilant as landslides may occur. Mr. Natembeya says recovery operations for missing people will begin today, Monday, 2 days after the mudslide.
What we're doing now, from today and tomorrow, we are putting in place a multi-agency team. We are basically done with the rescue efforts. From tomorrow, we are going to start recovery efforts to see whether these still missing, whether they are trapped in the mud or they travel somewhere else. Those very cases that are in dire need of shelter, we are making arrangements to have some of them settled at a primary school.
5 months ago, at least 60 people lost lives in the same area of West Pokot following mudslides, as the area is marked as dangerous during rainy season. Kenya Red Cross head of water and sanitation, Sylvester Bett, said that the agency is struggling to help the COVID-19 affected people, and now the calamity, warning about the safety of the people.
So we are having a multi-hazard situation where we are responding to COVID. We are also responding to floods. In West Pokot, we have had a landslide. Our teams have gone to ground to conduct assessments in collaboration with the governments and the county governments. We are already preparing ourselves to respond and support the families that have been displaced. It is unfortunate that we also have people that have lost their lives. And I think these ones will live as the search and rescue occurs, then we will get clearly the impact of the landslide that occurred in West Pokot.
The only police station in the area was swept away, and one police officer is among the missing persons. The authority says that people who will not leave areas marked as dangerous will be forcefully evicted to avoid loss of more lives, as the weatherman asked Kenyans to brace themselves for heavy rainfall. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Liberian media institutions, including some of the country's leading newspapers, are once again appealing to the government of President George Weah to pay them an estimated $247,000 owed them for advertising in their papers. Otello Gabala, president of the Publishers Association of Liberia, says the Liberian media depends heavily on advertising from the government, and not paying the debt would doom an already struggling media. Information Minister Eugene Nnabwe told VOA the Weah government acknowledges its indebtedness to the media institutions and would pay them by the end of April. Gabala says the government has made similar promises before, but he is still hopeful that the government will make good on its commitment this time around.
The governor of Liberia owed the Liberian media, particularly the print media, about $247,000 and change. This amount is more than that, but the government says that it can only pay for its ministries and agencies, meaning state-owned enterprises are not included in this debt. So if you were to add the state-owned enterprises, you will be talking around pretty close to $500,000, because most of the state-owned enterprises are also reluctant in paying debts. You talk about the Freeport of Monrovia, the NPA. You talked about the Liberian Airport Authority and other entities that do business with the media.
What does not getting this money from the government mean for the survival of the Liberian media?
This money means a lot to the media, because Liberia has a struggling media industry which depends heavily on the government in terms of advertising revenue. In the absence of this payment, we cannot pay our staff. We are unable to pay our taxes. We are unable to meet our rental obligations. And therefore, it kind of strangulates the media. And as a result of this, many of the experienced practitioners have left the profession. Some have gone into public administrations and things, and it is actually hurting the survival of the media here.
Here in the United States and in other countries, the media gets advertising from various sources, especially the private sector. Does the Liberian media get advertising from commercial sources?
When you look at the advertisement in this country, bulk of the advertisement come from government circles. The private industries here do not really advertise. The bulk of our advertisement come from the government and the NGOs, those job placements and things from private institutions now go to the executive mansion's website, the president's website. We have talked about this over and over, and yet the government has not taken any step towards that.
What are your options now in case the government does not pay the money that you say it owes the media institutions?
We want to be clear and be very optimistic that this government is going to pay our money. The Minister of Information has said that the government was going to make sure our money get disbursed this week, which of course we have no reason to doubt then. But in any case, what happens is that we have other options. Those options include a blackout of this government. We're going to issue a blockade on this government to ignore its publicity and everything that has to do with publicity about this government. We're going to ignore it. We're going to make sure that nothing from this government is aired. There are times we are also planning to suspend publications so that we can draw the international community attention while we have stopped publication.
Otello Gabala is the president of the Publishers Association of Liberia. You're speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with a look at how the COVID-19 pandemic is severely affecting sports on the African continent. In South Africa, Patrick Selebe, the development coach for Wheelchair Tennis South Africa, is worried that the sporting calendar of persons living with a disability in sports in South Africa has been negatively impacted, with many national and international tournaments cancelled.
As South Africans, we are definitely affected by this coronavirus because you can imagine our programs have been stopped. We no longer have coaching at centers. And you can imagine, I mean, some of the centers, the only thing they can do is wheelchair tennis, because remember, wheelchair tennis is the only sport in South Africa that can reach to rural areas.
Johan Duploy, the chair of South Africa Disabled Golf Association, speaks on how several cancellations of national and international competitions is affecting disabled sports in South Africa.
It's impacted disabled golf as it's impacted all the other sports internationally severely.
In Nigeria, the Nigerian Football Federation has announced that the 2019-2020 Nigeria Professional Football League season will be completed within 6 to 8 weeks after the coronavirus crisis. The league was suspended indefinitely on March 18th after match day 25 to contain the spread of COVID-19 that has paralyzed sporting activities in the country and the world at large. While the wait continues, football fans in Nigeria are eager to get their favorite sports back on regular schedule.
I miss football a lot, like really, really a lot. Most especially this lockdown period, I would have personally been watching football, but now there's nothing to watch. Somebody just go home, is bored, nothing at all.
Over the weekends, you have early kickoffs from like 12:30 to around 8:30 in the night. You still find yourself very much glued to the TV set watching this game. So it's not just a game, it's something personal now.
Nigeria Football Federation President Amaju Pinnick says the Football Federation is considering their priorities with the impact of coronavirus post the pandemic.
No, every competition is important. That I can tell you. There's no competition that is not important. But what's called the scale of preference. That is the truth. You look at your priority. You look at the priority right now. It doesn't mean in future that we cannot go back to, you know, there are so many things that we need to cut down on. We have to look at the reality of what is going on.
In basketball news, Brooklyn Nets guard Spencer Dinwiddie has confirmed that he's making arrangements to play for the Nigerian men's basketball team. Dinwiddie was not among the 44 players who USA Basketball named as finalists for the Olympic team in February. Nigeria has already clinched a spot in the Olympics by winning Group M at the FIBA World Championships. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, April 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you will have a great week.
Make a difference by honoring ordinary people doing extraordinary things to help one another. VOA encourages you to tell us about everyday people who have shown leadership in your communities during the coronavirus crisis. Submit your nominations to VOA Leaders at voanews.com. Send us your name, phone number, and email, and a VOA reporter will contact you. We're all in this together.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndumbulu and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.